Pavilion Opinions Podcast. Captain Cook keeps a firm hand on the tiller, Kuratni, as England prevail against Sri Lanka. There's Dhoni Baloney as India and the Windies decide test crickets. Well, just too much of a faff. And I look at the Kumar commotion as Sangakkara pulverises the politicians. Yes, hello and welcome back to the Pavilion Opinions Podcast, which is to the uninitiated, i.e. most people on the planet, just me, James, from pavilionopinions.com, offering a very gentle roundup of recent cricketing events. And first up on my roster is the quite unusual sight of an England team basking in the merry glow of an ODI series victory after Alistair Cook's side won out at Old Trafford and sealed a 3-2 win over Sri Lanka. The previous four games had contained some eye-catching individual displays, not least from Sri Lankan politics, but little in the way of genuine excitement. And England's 16-1 win provided this series and perhaps the forthcoming Indian one with a welcome bit of impetus. Not that the latter needs it, if you've seen any of the Wall-to-Wall Sky advertising. On Test Match Special, Aggers was perhaps a little bit sniffy about the stage of Old Trafford, but to me it remains ground that guarantees fervent and yeasty atmosphere, particularly after about 10 a.m, and both sides produced a display that brought the Sri Lankans' tour to a fizzing climax. It's interesting how it worked out. A couple more lusty blows from Angelo Matthews in the press box may again have sounded like a sous chef's training college as the knives were being sharpened for both Cook and Trott, but England's two most maligned performers seem to have blunted the attacks for the time being. It's hard to imagine that Cook's ever going to rival Picasso for creativity, but he does seem to encourage loyalty and a sense of calm on the pitch, and English hands were certainly like gum buckets in the outfield towards the end, taking some catches which were rendered far more difficult than I think they looked because of the blinding Manchester sunshine. Not a phrase you perhaps hear all that often. Cook also seemed to take Afton's claim. He was a bit of an ass, as a kick up his own rather than sulking about it, and the former England skipper's rather coquettish handling of the presentation ceremony, in which Cook was named Man of the Series, was a masterclass of suppressed British emotion from both parties. I very much doubt Afton minds being made to look silly in the name of someone else's cricketing vindication, but I also suspect he remains quietly confident his own blade will have the final cut on the issue of Cook's captaincy. We will have to wait and see. On the issue of England's performance itself, they sadly had all the smooth acceleration of Jenson Button emerging from a pit lane towards the end of their innings, but such was the platform laid by Keyswetter, Trott and Morgan that it mattered little that they lost 5-43 in 11.5 overs. It will probably on other occasions, and asking Swan swashbuckle the innings to par, albeit an adjusted one on Saturday, is not a scenario that I think will have India necessarily trembling. That said, I do still find it a little surprising that in all the talk of England needing a batting rejig, it's surprising Swan's name has never been mentioned in terms of a promotion. I know he's not performed probably in the last year with the bat, and I'm not suggesting he goes in at number 6, but the acceptance that from here on in he's just a useful number 9 seems a bit pessimistic to me, and I think it must gall Swan himself a little bit that Harbhajan Singh has overtaken him in the all-rounder aspiration of spinner stakes. Other points of note, on Saturday with the success of Dernbach in the final stages, there had been a lot of talk about his supposed variations coming into series, but the only element of surprise at times seemed to be that he could bowl any delivery that looked threatening, and his perhaps slightly below par performances were compounded by is having a bit of an unseelie spat at the crease with Mahela Jayawardena after the latter had already notched a serene ton at Lord's in one of the earlier ODIs. I suppose one learns to pick one's battles with age, but that confrontation was rather like Maria Callas performing Carmen and then Gerry Cadona heckling her for being a useless slag. But credit where it's due, and it is due to Dernbach, because he came back and removed both Matthews and Mooley with some canny bowling, and let's not forget that this is the pair that will give Aussie skipper Michael Clarke hives until his deathbed after the ninth wicket stand in Melbourne last year. And Dernbach showed his head was substantially clearer than his Beckham-esque emo arms at the crucial juncture. And just the final point from that match and the series, from arms to stomachs, and while Tim Breslin's may have shrunk, his balls remain as chunky as ever, whether with the bat, with his Fighting 75 in the ICC Champions Trophy, as the rest of England fell to pieces a couple of years ago, with the ball against the Oz, the same team at the MCG in the Ashes demolition last year, or with the ball against India at the World Cup, his astonishing fifer in incredibly benign bowling conditions, or here with his three top-order wickets for whatever meagre amount it was, to me he remains a player that really does pull it out of the fire when it matters. There's a lot of nonsense that feeds the debate around Samet Patel, but the Nottinghamshire all-rounder could do a lot worse than follow the Breslin approach to turning the blubbery into the blistering. Well, even if you don't think he's blistering, I still contend that Stuart Broad will be fretting a little bit ahead of the team being announced for the first test against India. And over in Dominica, there's been fretting aplenty as the island's first ever test ended with something of a whimper after India decided not to try and chase down what looked a pretty doable 86 off 90 balls. Test cricket doesn't so much shoot itself in the foot sometimes as bazooka itself in the heart. And there just seems something a bit remiss to have both sides celebrating such a lank draw. It wasn't an inexplicable decision by Dhoni at the end of a hard-fought series and ahead of inevitably an even harder one in England, but it still seemed a pretty shoddy call, not least in light of the fact that Dominican fans had turned out in force after it became apparent that Shivnarine Chanderpool was putting massive crab-shaped spanner in the Indian stroll to victory works with his 23rd test ton. I suppose it's conceivable the Windies could have turned down the offer of a draw, but they were obviously delighted with the result. But I dare say, spirit of fire in Babylon and all that, it might have been interesting to see what Clive Lloyd or Viv would have done in that situation. Back to the particular issue, and regardless of the negative outside line that Devendra Bishu was bowling at one end, I still think Dhoni's decision managed to lump him in with the same infuriatingly dispiriting collective of damp squib advocates, which thus far this summer have included Andrew Strauss, Lords and ICC weather regulations in Bridgetown. And when I have to think of Mahendra Singh Dhoni in the same way I think about ICC weather regulations, I want to weep until my eyes fall out. But it's important to get things in perspective, certainly in terms of some of the Twitter opprobrium that rained down on MSD. He's not the pariah, even if he has been a very naughty boy. So regardless of the two farcical ends in Bridgetown and Dominica, it has still been a thoroughly gripping series, and one in which a number of players have done their future prospects no harm at all, including Kirk Edwards, Reiner, the resurgent Ishant Sharma, and even Kumar's very nagging medium pace looks quite tasty, regardless of the jokes about India's depth of spin bowling. BJ, Kohli, Brendan Nash and Sarwan, on the other hand, have all had series they would rather forget. So, moving from the forgettable to the memorable and penultimate section, I'll just touch briefly on Kumar Sangakkara's speech to the MCC last week. when he spoke with huge emotion, wit and openness about the events that have shaped him as a man and a cricketer, including the terrorist attack his side suffered in Pakistan, and the civil war that pulled his nation apart, and how Ranatunga and the World Cup winning class of 1996 helped to piece it back together again. If you ever heard Sanger sledging Sean Pollock, is hilarious and on YouTube, or as sceptical that he couldn't hear his own voice during the toss at the World Cup final, then some of his early generalisations about the spirit of cricket may not have rung entirely true, but this is to quibble that the cafe at the foot of Mount Everest doesn't sell Kit Kats, because in truth this was a monstrous tour de force of rhetoric that culminated in a sustained and heartfelt attack on politicians' heavy-handed and interference in cricket. The fact that the Sri Lankan sports minister reacted to his speech by demanding an immediate inquiry rather proved Sanger's point. If you haven't listened to it, I really, really recommend that you do, and I'm pretty sure it's available on the Lord's website. Okay, so just to finish off, and due to a huge public demand in the form of one person asking, here's the second in the series of the never-to-be-popular series, Jeffrey Boycott Speaks Czech, in which I translate the bon mots of the great man into the language of my adopted country. So today's phrase is, he's got nothing between the ears, which in Czech is má nic mezi ušima. That's má nic mezi ušima. So, on that note of all displeasure, to everyone, and in particular those from Yorkshire and the Czech Republic, I'd like to thank you for listening. I'll try and keep a straight face when I say please do tweet or Facebook share this on if you've enjoyed it. But for now, this is James at pavilionopinions.com. Until next time, saying goodbye.